Welcome to Living Healthy Together. Each week we share patient stories, advice and insights from those closest to care, dive into health-related current events, and explore the local and national issues shaping healthcare across our region. I'm your host, Philip Rao, with University of Vermont Health. Most of the time on Living Healthy Together, we're talking about healthcare innovation in some form or another, and today is no exception. We're going to dive into one of the most significant innovations in healthcare delivery and the healthcare workforce over the last 15 to 20 years, the emergence of advanced practice providers, or APPs. APPs are healthcare professionals with advanced training to diagnose, treat, or manage medical conditions. While they're not medical doctors, their unique combination of clinical skills and training have earned them growing roles in everything from healthcare leadership to bedside care, and increased demand for their skills from healthcare organizations nationwide for their ability to ease access challenges and reduce the cost of care while maintaining continuity of care. In 2025, UVM Health employed more than 600 advanced practice providers in roles ranging from anesthesia to neurology. Today on Living Healthy Together, we'll speak with advanced practice providers from across our health system about their clinical work, their drive to build pathways of education and mentorship that support established colleagues and emerging providers, and what the future holds here and across healthcare. Joining us now is Jillian Belmont, a nurse practitioner in neurology and the director of advanced practice services at UVM Medical Center. Jillian, kick us off by sharing a bit about your path to becoming a nurse practitioner and this leadership role, which is currently unique in our health system.
My path started at the age of 13, and my primary care provider was actually a nurse practitioner. So that was my first sort of introduction to that career. I lived in rural New Hampshire, and so, you know, clinician shortage in rural areas, which we're still experiencing now. But I felt a connection to my provider and inspired by her and her intelligence and how she really connected with me as a human being. And so I knew when I was 13 that I was going to grow up and be a nurse practitioner. I worked hard and I went to college at St. Anselm in Manchester, New Hampshire at age 17. I got my bachelor's of science in nursing there and started working bedside for several years as a registered nurse. After that, I went back to school and obtained my master's degree in my family nurse practitioner focus. And from there, I accepted a job in neurology. Neurology actually wasn't my field of choice coming out of school. It was one I wasn't an expert in and felt probably the least confident in, but it was the only job available. And so I was like, well, I'll get my foot in the door and then get my career under me and then decide where I want to go. And I ended up falling in love with it and have stayed ever since. I actually worked over at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center. So that was my first academic medical center. I became a member of the stroke team. Cerebral vascular disease ended up being my specialty and really loved the acute patient management in the hospital and the stroke team. And we decided to build a neurocritical care unit. And so I went back to school again and received my acute care adult gero postmaster certificate. So some additional training in that critical care space. I also ended up obtaining my doctoral degree, and that really led to leadership opportunities in the Department of Neurology there. So started to build out advanced practice, started to build out the neurocritical care unit and all of those entities. And I moved to Vermont about 2 years ago, joining this academic medical center. I became involved in my state board for my professional nursing organization. I became a national leader with our organization. I joined community boards on the school board as well. From the clinical perspective, working at the Academic Medical Center introduced me to research. I was on clinical trials with my physician colleagues, published peer review articles. I wrote a couple of textbook chapters, presented nationally. It's really exciting, all of the things that you can do in nursing and medicine. But while doing all of these things, I always maintained my clinical practice, and I still do to this day. I think it's really important to stay rooted in patient care and evolve on improving health systems.
Also with us today is Sarah Bushweller, a physician assistant and lead advanced practice provider for general internal medicine and geriatrics at UVM Medical Center. Like Jillian, Sarah is a leader at the state and national levels, working on policy issues and legislation with the Physician Assistant Academy of Vermont, Vermont Medical Society, and the American Academy of Physician Assistants. She also chairs the Advanced Practice Providers Council at UVM Medical Center, which is an internal group that focuses on operational and cultural priorities that impact APPs at the Academic Medical Center. That's a lot of different hats to wear on top of maintaining an active primary care practice. Sarah, why did getting involved at the policy level interest you, and what priorities are important to advanced practice providers in our region?
Over my career, it became apparent that there is absolutely a need to have nurse practitioners, PAs, the whole extent of APPs sitting at the table in rooms where conversations are happening, involving leadership, involving the work that we do every day. That was clear to me back in 2015 when the APP Council was being started, because a group of nurse practitioners had felt like their really important needs weren't being met. And through that, I had the opportunity to listen to other leaders, to see leaders, to actually to attend education in CME that was specific for advanced practice provider leadership. And it fascinated me. I love the medicine piece, but I also am really passionate about the importance of APPs being at the table. And because of that, I've had essentially 10 years of this wonderful ability to sit at some tables and speak for APPs and to bring information back to them. Right now, this legislative session, there's work that impacts nurse practitioners and PAs. Vermont has a patient bill of rights, which is an important document. What's interesting about the Vermont patient bill of rights is that instead of keeping the options broad as far as who can care for patients in the hospital, the Vermont legislation and document specifically says physicians. So the Vermont Nurse Practitioner Association, the PAV, Vermont Medical Society are all weighing in, and the Vermont NP Association has a bill where they are looking to open the door there to allow nurse practitioners and also PAs be able to admit patients, discharge patients. A perfect example is nurse midwives, people who have chosen to have their pregnancy followed by the midwives. The midwives should be able to admit those patients. Right now, the midwives are doing the majority of the work while those patients are admitted, but they have to have a physician sign. And so to clear up the administrative burden for physicians, we're hoping to get that written in a way that reflects what is happening in surrounding states.
I mentioned earlier that APP is a label that applies to many different practitioners, and that can change based on where you are. When we say APP, who are we talking about?
APP is an umbrella term, and the term used by a lot of health systems that includes nurse practitioners, physician assistants, our CRNAs or nurse anesthetist colleagues, CAAs, which we have here in Vermont, but is not a role that's in every state. Those are certified anesthesiologist assistants, which are a similar role to the PAs, but in the anesthesia world. Clinical nurse specialists and our certified nurse midwives. Those are the usual players when we talk about APP umbrella, but that can be different everywhere you go. There's lots of other non-physician providers that are finding a space there. And it's important because each role has a defined education pathway, a national certification, a little bit different training, licensure, and scope, which is governed by a state law. And so though there's a lot of similarities and a lot of the goals and clinical practice is the same, there are differences in training and what each role brings to the table.
Yeah. Depending on the hospital or the organization or the health system, they may define APPs differently. UVM Health defines APPs as PAs, nurse practitioners, which include nurse midwives, CRNAs, and then certified anesthesiology assistants. They practice in Vermont. The definition in New York for hospital systems outside of ours wouldn't include them. Sometimes the definition will include a clinical nurse specialist, but essentially advanced practice providers, professionals who are practicing medicine, prescribing medicines, treating patients, evaluating patients. There's actually a full definition that we have in the bylaws for the health system that specifies what an APP is.
Jillian, how has the landscape for nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and other advanced practice providers changed over the last 5 to 10 years?
It's very obvious that the future of healthcare depends on fully utilizing highly trained clinicians. APPs are a big part of that now and in the future. Particularly, nurse practitioners have expanded significantly as healthcare has become more complex and team-based. We're now embedded across primary care, specialty care like neurology, cardiology, surgery, acute care, right, in the critical care space, emergency medicine, behavioral health, rural health, leadership roles, and often serving as the primary clinician for patients. The workforce growth rates for nurse practitioners was about 40% over the last 10 years. And we've seen that here at UBM as well. Our growth rates of APPs in our health system have matched that 40% over the last 6 to 8 years as far as number of APP roles we're hiring here into the system. So we're matching national trends, which is great to see. And with that, we're seeing that APPs are increasingly relied upon, not just for access, but for quality, continuity, and stability of our system.
A large portion of these changes are happening in state legislatures, in internal policy writing, and day-to-day workflows at or across healthcare organizations. Do patients feel the impact of these structural changes in policy or the way laws or bills of rights are written?
I had a colleague share with me a situation that she ran into. Her practice is mostly inpatient medicine, and there was a patient that was admitted on the floor. They were waiting to go to subacute rehab, and they needed to be discharged. And because of the interpretation of the patient bill of rights, the way it's written in Vermont, she had to wait, and that patient had to wait for the surgeon to finish the surgery to then physically go sign the discharge papers. Whereas they had worked through the entire plan as a team, the patient was ready to go, but had to wait because of this administrative piece that really stuck with me as we can do better. We can do better. This is not a change in our scope of practice at all. This is just trying to get the right care to the patients and help with efficiency, because access is an issue everywhere for Vermonters, New Yorkers, I think across the country. It's a challenge.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressures on clinicians right now as to what people think we should be doing and how we should be taking care of patients. And it is dependent on insurance and billing and payers, and remaining autonomous and having that trust from our employer and our patients is important for us to be able to help make decisions, the right decisions for our patients. And there's different models of how APP roles can be utilized to care for patients. So how do we build out programs that are meeting high quality care and taking care of patients when they enter our doors?
We're taking a quick break. When we come back on Living Healthy Together, we'll talk with two nurse practitioners whose work in maternity and cardiac critical care showcase how advanced practice providers are raising the bar for specialized care. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Living Healthy Together, and welcome to certified nurse midwife Corey Gilkey of the OBGYN practice at Central Vermont Medical Center and critical care nurse practitioner Erica Charkalis of the cardiovascular intensive care unit at UVM Medical Center. We're diving into how advanced practice providers are helping address some of healthcare's biggest challenges. You're both members of teams that deliver highly specialized, multidisciplinary care. How does being a nurse practitioner impact your work in maternity and cardiac care? Erica, let's start with you.
It's what I've always wanted to do, for sure. I've always wanted to practice in the intensive care unit. And I really am intrigued by the surgical ICU, the medical ICU. But I think the thing that I'm most drawn to talking about, thinking about, treating is cardiovascular disease. And I love the role of being a nurse practitioner. I always brag that I kind of think it's the best of all worlds. I still am very close and kind of in tune with the bedside nurse. I understand what it's like to be a bedside nurse. And I practice with that in mind, with knowing the struggles that bedside nurses have and some of the conflicts, the perspectives that they have. So I try to practice medicine that way as well. And then I also get to have more in-depth conversations with the attendings than sometimes I had as a bedside nurse, because I step away from the bedside and I get to be involved in some of the discussions that they have. And then I work a lot with residents and medical students, and I feel like I'm their ally of sorts. They come to me for teaching and advice. And so I love bridging that divide of being able to kind of be on everyone's team, if you will, and have that variety of experience where I get to not only practice medicine, but I get to do some teaching with a lot of our students and learn myself, because it's an academic medical center. And I love being able to come in every day and have exposure to that myself.
Corey, what do certified nurse midwives bring to an OBGYN practice?
The difference between obstetrics and midwives, both are essential roles in the birthing world. We work really collaboratively. The difference is more about philosophy more than skill. Obstetric care, I think, is more medically driven and intervention focused, which we need that at times. It's very crucial in high-risk situations. OBs are surgeons and specialists in managing complex pregnancies and emergencies. Midwifery, on the other hand, I think is rooted more in viewing pregnancy and birth as a normal physiological process for low-risk individuals. Research shows that midwifery care is associated with lower intervention rates. We have really good outcomes when we attend births and high patient satisfaction. I think the impact is relational. Patients really feel heard, I think, when they see us for visits. And it's more about taking care of not just the patient and not just supporting the patient during pregnancy and birth, but also afterwards. We're seeing these people back for GYN care and second pregnancies. So it's more about treating, I think, the family as a unit. We do collaborate on high risk care, but when a patient comes high risk, at some point, if they develop a high risk situation, they risk out of midwifery care, or it needs to be co-managed with a physician. Midwives spend a lot of time on education, on prevention. Shared decision making is huge. Our appointments tend to be longer. We focus on empowering patients to make informed choices. We're trained to really recognize when something is normal and, importantly, when to involve our obstetrical colleagues.
Erica, in January, you celebrated 20 years at UVM Medical Center, and you've held a wide variety of clinical roles. How has your experience with team-based care models evolved over that time?
I've always felt in any of my roles as a secretary, as an LNA, as a bedside nurse, as a nurse practitioner, I have always felt that I could approach anybody. To this day, I walk down the halls of UVM and I am saying hi to everyone there. I feel like we all have really good relationships, which isn't just about personal feelings. It's nice to have good relationships with people, but I think that it begets like really good patient care. If everyone on the team in every aspect of that patient's care feels comfortable going to another person, we're going to be really in tune with what's happening. We're going to detect things that aren't going well earlier. So I think that's led to really great communication. I think we've always been really good at communicating, but I think as a network, we've gotten a lot better about networking, about reaching out to people and starting the care of the patient before they arrive right in front of us, and being more holistic in that sense. And same for when they leave too. In the cardiac surgery role that I had, I was constantly talking to cardiologists and primary care doctors throughout Vermont and upstate New York before we did surgery as well as after. And so I was able to develop some of those professional relationships too, which I think has gotten better.
Corey, you played an integral role in expanding midwifery care at CVMC, helping to recruit certified nurse midwives to join the team in response to requests from the community for more access to midwifery care. Tell me what you've seen, heard, and felt from the community since joining the hospital's OBGYN practice in 2020.
The feedback I have received from patients and other practitioners in our practice have received is extremely positive. Obviously, there's hospitals that really were deep-rooted in the midwifery community, but CVMC, you know, now that we offer 24/7 midwifery coverage, we are doing less types of practices that are more interventional. We are doing things that, you know, Gifford may be doing. We don't offer water birth, but we're hopefully going to be incorporating that into our practice within the next year. I feel like people are happy with the care that they're getting. I think a lot of time they're surprised at the care that they've gotten, and we're seeing them come back. That's the most amazing thing. They're coming back for their second, their third babies. The only wish I had is I wish it was more out in the community, that we are a different practice than we were, say, 5 years ago. I think the word is slow to get out, but I think people are telling their friends and family members, and we're seeing such positive effects from that.
One of the big through lines I've heard from advanced practice providers is a love of education, both as learners and teachers. Does education, teaching, and professional development figure into your practices as well?
I always wanted to be a teacher, so that kind of plays into my job. I don't think I'd have as much job satisfaction if I just swiped in, swiped out, charted, and kind of did that. I think a big part of my job satisfaction is that it is an academic medical center, and I have the opportunity, and I don't think that every APP necessarily has the opportunity, but I'm lucky that I have the opportunity to work with a lot of learners. I do like teaching. I really like that being a part of my job. I'm working with other intensive care colleagues right now trying to develop a surgical ICU curriculum, an ICU curriculum in general for the different residents that rotate through the service. So we're developing that right now to make it more standardized, make it predictable for them and valuable. And then I work with a lot of new ICU nurses. I'm a part of their boot camp, if you will, that they're onboarding, where I teach a class about the CVICU. At one point, a few years ago, I taught online for Norwich University. They had a new acute care nurse practitioner program. So I was a clinical instructor for them. I gave them feedback and did some teaching when it comes to their clinical rotations. So it's a huge part. I host case presentations for the CVICU team so that we can review cases that we've done recently and stay up to date on literature. I try to jump into journal clubs that are happening and grand rounds throughout the hospital. And then I'm always just creeping along when the residents are getting their formal education. I'm trying to hop into and learn. I'm always learning stuff every single day. There's something new to learn from people.
When I came to CVMC, you know, we weren't in the position to take midwifery students. I'm very passionate about that because I really believe in growing our own midwives. And we are finally able to take midwifery students. We have our second student now. So I'm very excited about that because I think it's so important to give back to our profession.
We've talked about the growth of nurse practitioner roles in practice up to now, but what's next? Is there a clear next step or evolution that you can see coming? Do you ever wonder, given how much things have changed over the last 10 to 15 years, what the next 5 or 10 years is going to look like?
There's definitely the discussion that's always been in place about the role of APPs in the healthcare system, knowing that there are doctors and others that are also practicing, and how do we compare? How do we add up what's appropriate for us to take care of versus inappropriate? I think that the APP job market is going to be strong. I think it'll continue to grow. I think the reality is that there's a need in healthcare for sick patients to be taken care of and healthy patients to be taken care of so that they don't become sick. And as a society, we have to meet that need. And it's going to have to be met with a variety of solutions. It's going to be met by doctors, and it's going to be met by APPs. I think that regardless of your background and your profession, you just have to have standards that we uphold, where we are competent in our practice and we're encouraged to grow in our practice, regardless of if they're in an academic medical center working around it or if they're not. I think promoting a continuing education for APPs is going to be important.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll sit down with a family nurse practitioner and APP leader from Northern New York who leads a group of advanced practice providers that serve as the core of what many would consider the hospital's most important service line, primary care. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Thank you. Welcome back to Living Healthy Together, and welcome Brianne Giroir, a family nurse practitioner and lead APP in primary care for Alicide Medical Center in Malone, where advanced practice providers have for many years been a key piece of the primary care puzzle. Brianne, you grew up in the community served by Alicide and joined the hospital's primary care team in 2016 after working for some time as a registered nurse. What was it like orienting yourself as an emerging practitioner?
I can remember when I was working as a registered nurse in Syracuse, I worked on a med-surg floor while I was in nurse practitioner school. And I remember my first few days doing clinicals here at Alicide. I specifically remember really loving how much the patients appreciated their care. And, you know, this is a small rural community. And I was doing clinicals at the walk-in clinic. And I just remember the patients just being so appreciative. And that was something that was really different from the bigger hospital I was working in. You know, the patients there, although appreciative, just a different level of kindness. And that just felt really rewarding to give people care and then to just have them be so grateful.
Talk about your decision to become a family nurse practitioner. Was that always your plan when you decided to pursue a career in healthcare?
I think for me, I got into nursing really young. I was an RN when I was 20, and then I just wanted to get my bachelor's degree because that's the way that nursing was going at the time. We were told we were going to have to get our bachelor's degrees. And then after the bachelor's degree, it seemed really feasible to go on and do more. I did quite well in school, and I was in the right place to continue on with my academic journey. So I just did it, and I just kind of believed in myself that I could do it. And I knew I wanted to return to Malone and hopefully Alicide. And I thought it would be really a nice story to sort of grow up in a small community, go away, get an education, and then come back and serve that same community.
What's it like having brought that full circle and being someone who cares for people's health and wellness in a place where you also have these strong personal relationships?
I think it's really incredible. It's really nice to go to the grocery store, and I can't really walk into the grocery store without seeing at least 3 to 5 patients that I know, and they're just so happy to see you in the community. It doesn't feel like I'm traveling an hour to see a provider and I don't know them. My patients really, they know me when they come in, and we see each other every 3, every 6 months, even at a year. They ask me, how old are your children now? And what's going on here? And the same thing with them. I remember their weddings. I remember when they had children. And so it's really nice to grow with your patients and just get to know, and also taking care of families as a whole is really nice. I'm always learning that this patient I take care of, oh, that's the sister of this other patient I took care of, and I've been taking care of them both for 5 years, and I had no idea. So those connections are really quite nice, too.
You've had a variety of clinical experiences. Why is primary care at a critical access hospital the right place for you?
Primary care is the right place for me because you can do a little bit of everything, and it's always different. And I said before, I like seeing the same patients over the last 10 years or nearly 10 years. It's been a lot of the same patients, but their conditions are not the same as they were 10 years ago. So that's been really rewarding. And you're constantly learning. You're constantly seeing things that you haven't seen before. So working in rural medicine and as a nurse practitioner, it's a little bit different here. These patients of mine, they're my panel. I don't have somebody else who has eyes on a lot of these patients unless they see a specialist provider. So you're really sort of flying solo here and taking care of these patients. And that's something when you work in a bigger city, you don't get. You're always collaborating with somebody else and you're always part of a team, where here we're part of a team in other ways. So in terms of primary care as an APP, you're sort of running your own patient population and you're running the show here and you're directing 100% of their care. So although they may see a cardiologist, they may see a specialist, they're not going to do that unless you sort of hold their hand and get them there. That's different working here than at a bigger institution.
About 2 years ago now, Alicide made a transition, becoming a critical access hospital. As a practitioner, how did that process feel and what's it been like working in that environment?
I think whenever you're part of a big transition, as much as it sounds selfish, the initial thought is, how does this affect me? And then the other thought is, all right, how does this affect the people around me? For me, what that means is we're the only hospital for miles, and we're small, we're rural, we're designed to keep healthcare local here. And so the definition didn't really change. We were already doing that. It's just how we do it is a little bit different. I think the big thing when we talk about the definition of the rural hospital is it's less number of beds, has to be in a rural and underserved community. And the focus is on acute care and keeping the patients as close to home as possible, but transferring them when needed. With a critical access hospital, we're small, but the impact is quite huge, right? So we stabilize our patients and we do what we can here, keep it local, but then also recognizing when they need a higher level of care, which I would argue is something that we've always done here at Alice Hyde. I think since we've transitioned to the critical access part of it, we're just doing better at the things that we were already doing before.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting being at Alice Hyde myself for a fair number of years. All of that critical access stuff was already baked into the hospital's culture, but a different institution, it probably could have felt like a much bigger jump, whereas at Alice Hyde, more business as usual.
Yeah, and I think too, when we talk about the changes that have actually happened, the goal is always the same, but inpatient management is a little bit different now as we have this new swing bed program, which can be really helpful for those patients that are in between needing rehab and hospitalization.
Tell me about your experience becoming an APP leader at Alice Hyde. What's it been like for you and what are your priorities as a clinical leader in primary care?
A big thing that I work on is our use of the electronic health systems and access to care in that way. So patients using MyChart, we're constantly learning about that. I collaborate with a lot of the clinicians at UVM as well as Elizabethtown, sit on a lot of meetings about how do we make this better? How do we make MyChart better? How do we get patients the care that they need? How do we reach out to them through MyChart? Because technology is always advancing. So I learn about it and then move it into practice on how we make changes.
One of the things I said at the beginning of this segment is that advanced practice providers have, for some time now, been a cornerstone of Alice Hyde's primary care mission. Many of these folks have been entrenched in rural communities as one of the few, if not the only, local primary care providers for years or decades. They care for patients and families across generations. When you joined Alice Hyde, what impact did you make on patients' experience?
When I took on this role in 2016, I had a group of patients that were establishing with me that had been through many providers in the years prior to that. So these were patients that had given their complete medical history to a provider and built a trusting relationship. And then 6 to 12 months later, that provider is no longer there. And so they have to repeat themselves with the next provider. And that has happened to a large number of my patients multiple times. So the big message I got when I started from a lot of my patients was, wait a minute, before I give you my whole health history, are you going to be here in a year or is this just a waste of my time? And you can never 100% make that promise because life happens. But I knew that at that current moment, my plan was to stay here, and that's always been my plan. So I'm really happy that a lot of those patients that I started with nearly 10 years ago are still my patients, and I can still say, yep, I'm still here. You haven't had to repeat yourself to a new provider yet in the 10 years. So that's been really nice, and I think patients appreciate that because although you can see a new specialist and you might have to repeat yourself, it's nice when you go to your routine follow-ups to not have to repeat your whole history because I already know it. I know what happened to them 3 years ago. I know about the heart attack that they had 2 years ago. I know that they lost their mom 6 months ago. So they don't have to repeat all those traumatic events. I think patients find a lot of comfort in that.
That interpersonal history, there's no replacement for it, especially in today's healthcare world where a lot of times people are told, talk to your PCP, talk about, hey, I'm struggling with mental health or hey, I'm struggling with substance use. That's really hard to do if you don't have history.
Absolutely. And even with a history, sometimes it's really hard. I have patients that have been struggling with anxiety or depression, and I've been seeing them for years. And then one day they just say, I've been really struggling with this, but I just didn't want to say anything. And it's like, okay, I'm so happy that you finally felt comfortable enough to open up about this and we can talk about it. If they continued to get shuffled around between providers, I don't think they would ever feel comfortable to really say that.
We're taking a break here on Living Healthy Together. When we come back, we'll sit down with two physicians' assistants whose passion for clinical care and education motivated them to play leading roles in APP governance and mentorship. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Living Healthy Together, where we're diving into the expanding role and importance of advanced practice providers across UVM Health and healthcare in general. We're joined now by John Ford, a physician assistant and nocturnist, who in 2016 became the first hospitalist APP employed by UVM Medical Center and later joined the hospitalist team at Porter Medical Center in Middlebury, Vermont. And Mo Paquette, a physician assistant and manager of the APP team in the emergency department at Champlain Valley Physicians Hospital in Plattsburgh, New York. John, let's start with you and with the obvious first question. What is a nocturnist?
So a nocturnist is a provider or a hospitalist that functions strictly for night shift coverage for cross-covering purposes, for doing admissions, rarely discharges, but predominantly admissions, and then responding to critical care scenarios vis-a-vis rapid responses or stabilizing somebody before it becomes the rapid response. That work was really interesting to me. And as a new grad at the time and working at St. Peter's Hospital too, it was a really mature program with a lot of APPs, more so during the day than at night, but they were very much used to getting new providers on board. And it was really helpful and incredibly, it was in the position of cross-covering around 150 patients at its worst. And it had a really rapid learning curve, but I enjoyed all of that. And I really like hospitalist medicine in general because you get to see this continuity of care while also having a good amount of acuity. And so you can actually see people get better. Unfortunately, sometimes not, but ideally getting better and leaving the hospital improved from where they came in. So it's really gratifying, I think, to be able to do that.
Let's talk about hospitalist medicine and being an advanced practice provider at Porter. What was it like moving your practice from an academic medical center, UVM Medical Center, to a critical access hospital at Porter?
I joined up with the medical center in 2016, fall of 2016, and I was actually the first hospitalist APP that they've ever had, which actually surprising when you look at regional care. So that was a new development for that group. And it was interesting to see growth even within this smaller scale to adding a few more ADPs and seeing how we could best be integrated into the workflow of a really having both a teaching service and then a non-house staff service, which is, you know, which was managed by the APPs and the physicians. So that was the evolution there. And then I started per diem work with Porter in 2019 and then transitioned full-time initially as a nocturnist. So in 2023, I joined up full-time as a nocturnist. And I've been there for about 2 years. The first year is nocturnist work, and then I transitioned to day shift work. And I think care at a critical access hospital is different. You have less resources. While you do have access to a phone and phoning a friend and calling the specialists up at UVM, speaking with the attendings there for guidance, the resources are fewer. And so you have to be a little more selective with what you order and think about, particularly when you're admitting somebody overnight, is this patient right for Porter? Are we going to provide the best possible care in this setting? Do they need more than what we can do? And I've seen some new attendings come in who are fresh out of residency, kind of really needing to adapt to that because it is very different than the resources that you have available up at the medical center.
Mo, what does it mean to be an APP leader in an emergency department setting? Is this the role you thought you'd be playing when you decided to pursue a career in healthcare?
My mom worked at what was then Fletcher Allen in a non-clinical capacity, so I always knew about the hospital. And then at a young age, I had a family member who was quite sick, who got a lot of their care, great care at UVM. So from a really young age, I always thought I wanted to be in healthcare. And initially, I wanted to go to medical school and become a physician. And upon graduating, I started working at UVM in a couple different capacities. One of them was as a medical scribe in the emergency department, and the other was as a unit clerk in the neonatal intensive care unit. And in both those positions, I was really able to work with a broad swath of specialties. I was getting ready to apply to med school, take the MCAT, and I kind of had this last second change where I decided I didn't think being a physician was for me, and the APP window, and specifically being a PA, really fit what I wanted. I was really lucky. I got in my first attempt and went to PA school at Duke University. When I graduated, I decided to do an APP postgraduate training program at Duke University in the emergency department. And luckily, as I was coming back, a physician who I had kind of stayed in close contact with said, "Hey, we're hiring APPs. Do you want to come work in Plattsburgh?" And I jumped at the opportunity. Started as a clinical PA, seeing patients and working clinically, and that role has grown a lot to include education for our new PAs in the emergency department and a little bit throughout the hospital. I get to work closely with our medical director and the medical admin team, and then also with our nurse manager and the nursing team, and to work on policies and education and kind of all aspects of care and things that go into care in Plattsburgh while still working clinically. So it really is the best of both worlds. I get to do education. I get to work with new graduate APPs. I get to work with PA students, but I also get to work clinically still and see patients, which I really love.
You and John are both hugely invested in colleague education and mentorship. Tell me about the work you're doing to enhance training opportunities for emerging practitioners at CVPH.
My current role is I wear a lot of different hats, the clinical PA side of things, the ED APP manager, and then we've developed what's called the Transition of Practice Program, which is similar to what other locations call PA residencies or PA fellowships, but we call it a Transition of Practice Program. And it's a one-year program for new graduates or people transitioning into the emergency department who have never practiced in EM. And that's what I've been doing for the last 18 months. We've had three people complete our program, and we are in the process right now of applying for accreditation and to be nationally recognized as an accredited postgraduate PA program.
Are programs like this common, or is this something that's unique to Plattsburgh?
It's becoming more and more common for APPs, especially going into procedural-based specialties, so surgery, emergency medicine specifically. It's becoming more and more common that PAs do postgraduate training years or year and a half, sometimes 2 years in specialty areas. What really makes us unique is that we're a community hospital and we've been able to do this. A lot of programs are at large academic institutions and we've been able to do it at a community hospital and really build it from scratch, which I think makes us pretty unique. Obviously, the program is really new. We're revising and going back and looking at how did year one go? What did our trainees say? And how can we improve the program? And incorporating that feedback in to kind of grow our program in its second year.
John, we've mentioned you being the first APP hospitalist employed by UVM Medical Center, but you came into that experience having previously worked in a very mature hospitalist program that included APPs. What's it like being on the ground floor as an organization begins to broaden APP practice opportunities? Surely there are growing pains.
The leaders of the group at that time were really wonderful, gracious physicians to work with. And I think they were very receptive to areas that could have been improved upon. For example, initially, we were given a lot of the more longer-term patients, the chronically ill, difficult discharge. And from someone who really enjoys hospitalist medicine and acuity, that was a culture shock for me. I mean, I came from a night shift world running rapid responses to really looking at more longitudinal care, and wasn't entirely satisfying. But I think over time, they recognized that. And they themselves were publishing at the time and really understood every patient has some teaching to provide. And I think it allowed for us to sort of change the makeup of the group. And then as the focus then transitioned to unit-based care, that brought up more conversations about patient mix and how we best staff and provide patient care up at the hospital. So there was definitely some growing pains. And I think that with the current leadership that we have and that big change to go to unit-based care, we're all learning. And from an APP standpoint, I would have loved to have this very robust APP program like I was used to and focus on a teaching program to have a fellowship. That was an aspirational goal while I was there. But there's this reality that this is also a teaching institution and the focus very much is supporting the graduate education process. So it was interesting to be stuck between those two And I think they're still figuring it out.
You've supported and mentored emerging practitioners for many years now. What's an investment health systems and hospitals could make that would really advance APP practice?
I've had predominantly PA learners, few nurse practitioners. Not that I'm not open to nurse practitioners. There's just different restrictions with their needs. Like they have to be with a nurse practitioner for some period of time. So it kind of complicates having them with our program. But I started that in 2017. And so I've steadily supported a few APPs annually, barring expanded family and just not having bandwidth to do it. But education has been really important. I think it's a service that we owe to our profession. And I am absolutely happy to help students figure their path out. And it's been really fun and rewarding. The students I had last year, both of them are planning on going into hospitalist medicine. And it's fun to be a part of that process. If I was still up at UVM and not at Porter, I had this vision of a year-long program that allowed for APs, NPs, and PAs to experience what the network has to offer, including the critical access experience, and then, of course, the very resourced med center experience, because it's a different type of practice. And I think it's really great learning your foundation at a community hospital. I think that's really where you get a lot of the work and knowledge and experience.
Mo, what's the response among your colleagues in the CVPH emergency department been like to the fellowship program?
As we started talking about doing a second cohort and reviewing some of the data and the feedback and seeing the growth of our APPs at the bedside, looking at how many patients they're seeing and looking at their knowledge base on assessments, I think everybody kind of saw the benefit of this. And I think we're really lucky in emergency medicine, the provider group that we have, both the physicians and the APPs, they all bought into this in Plattsburgh and said, we're going to do this. And they showed up. Like they truly did. And it was, I think it also makes the people in the program, they want to show up every day, right? Because if you see somebody who's putting in their own time, creating a lecture, driving across the lake, coming on post overnight to give a talk about a topic that they are a expert in, you want to show up, you want to listen, and you want to grow. So I think I was a little surprised initially, but then I saw the team that we have, and I think it's part of the community that we have in emergency medicine, especially in Plattsburgh, and it kind of clicked that, you know, this is the great team that we have. And I want to give a huge shout out to our director in Plattsburgh, Dr. Onchman. I was, I think, the fourth APP who he brought on in Plattsburgh. And our group has grown. We've almost doubled in size, which I think is a testament to what he's done in the community that he's been made, in the community that everybody over there creates, both the nurses and all of our other staff, the pharmacists, the crisis clinicians, our clinical assistants, our consultants that make people want to work there and then make it a good place to do training and education.
That's all the time we have today on Living Healthy Together. Thanks to all our guests for being with us and sharing their stories and insights. If you're out there listening and have a question, comment, or idea for a future episode, email us at healthtalk@uvmhealth.org. Living Healthy Together is also available as a podcast. If you're interested in checking out some of our past episodes, look us up wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm your host, Philip Rao. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.